Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 4th day of May, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Call. And once again, if there's a way to characterize most of the news this week, you might call it a prelude to Civil War 2.0. We saw riots at the public cesspools masquerading as colleges and universities, a.k.a. Centers for Higher Indoctrination. But they weren't even doing that this week, and a lot of the so-called protesters that turned out to be inciting violence or worse weren't even actual students. No surprise there. By the end of the week, for example, the Daily Mail had a piece called Professional Protesters at Texas Unmasked. In those protests in Austin, 45 of the 79 protesters arrested earlier in the week weren't even students. One of them was a well-known local agitator with 8 previous arrests, and UT Austin later found guns, buckets of large rocks, bricks, steel, reinforced wood planks, mallets, and chains at the so-called protest. Said the school in a statement the next day, quote, "These numbers validate our concern that much of the disruption on campus over the past week has been orchestrated by people from outside the university, including groups with ties to escalating protests at other universities around the country." Early in the week, some of these Soros connections were revealed, like in this story. And this is actually another one of those that's in hindsight so obvious that you'd figure all it takes is the headline. Revealed, says the Daily Mail, and that's kind of a major admission coming from them. George Soros is the head honcho communist paying activists to head campus protests that, of course, have wreaked havoc all across America with a K. Multiple leaders of the so-called anti-Israel protests at college campuses across the once-free United States have now been revealed to be paid fellows of Soros-connected groups. Who could have possibly imagined such a thing? And among those funded by the Soros Open Society Foundations over the last few years are UC Berkeley, NYU, University of Minnesota, Emerson, Columbia, WashU in St. Louis, University of Texas at Austin, Yale, Tufts, Harvard, MIT, University of Maryland, Vanderbilt, and UNC Chapel Hill, among others. And they have all kinds of wonderful, clever sayings that they're pushing, too. And these sound oh so peaceful and anti-fascist, don't they? Things like, obliterate Israel, Zionists don't deserve to live, and this particular favorite, quote, kill a Jew. And I guess, folks, if you can say that you see some parallels between this Fourth Reich and the Third, you're not alone. Now, the week started out with stories like this, I should say more stories like this, from any number of college campi sick around the country. A group of anti-Israel Hamas-supporting, and of course Soros-supported, it would seem, protesters sick at Columbia University, now they've turned violent, have seized the historic Hamilton Hall, smashing windows, unfurling their Intifada banner, and they're now refusing to leave, and their actions are being compared to the January 6th so-called insurrection. Although, folks, your cynical host can't help but suggest the FBI handlers didn't have to take as active of a role in this one. Protesters, it said in the Daily Mail coverage, stormed and occupied the building on the main campus of the Manhattan University after smashing their way into the school. And this after the 2 p.m. deadline Monday for protesters being told by the administration to leave or face suspension. Since their takeover was shared on social media, users have been trying to compare the scenes to the January 6th riots when Donald Trump supporters overran the U.S. Capitol, unquote, and what a crocky you-know-what. There were no cops inviting these folks in, and what do you bet the deep state isn't about to go after them with tongs and send them to the gulags either? Just ask Merrick Garland. From the left coast, we had this, where the University of the People's Republic again showed us the difference between free speech that turns out to be not actually so free, or not so free speech that's actually bought and paid for, especially when it's not really speech, and a lot closer to violence, certainly headed that way. Said Zero Hedges coverage. Chaos erupts at the far-left University of California at Los Angeles after pro-Hamas, they say pro-Gaza, activists refused entry to students who weren't allied with the leftist cause. It's like the Seattle Chaz encampment all over again, they begin. Far-left activists have declared the UCLA campus a liberated zone, and they're refusing entry for lots of students not affiliated with the pro-Gaza protest. They've erected barriers, placed guards, and created makeshift checkpoints which require their special wristband in order to gain passage. Now this, folks, is a publicly funded university with students that have paid to take classes there, although I can't imagine why they're still being barred from class. Says one of the sources, wristbands are being used to identify anti-Israeli students at UCLA so that they're allowed to enter things like the Royce Quad, Royce Hall, and Powell Library. Some students are allowed in and out, others are kept out. This, notes the source, is illegal, and UCLA is not just tolerating it, but actually facilitating it. In other words, says Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, if you aren't one of their allies, you don't get to attend classes. Or, if you're lucky, maybe you're allowed to take the much longer route around the barricades, but keep in mind, this is not a protected form of protest or free speech, and that explains why so many college campuses have chosen to have protesters removed by police. But so far, UCLA appears to be supporting the activists, sick, and has allowed them to take control. One student wearing a Star of David was denied entry to his own university because he's Jewish. I'm a UCLA student, he said. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school, and they're not letting me walk in. And as the piece notes, the barricades and the selective barring of certain students has led to predictable anger. Various groups are now engaging protesters and have triggered what can only be described, and you knew it was coming, didn't you, as an all-out brawl. The use of weapons has been common. Firecrackers have been fired at activist tents. And whether or not the fighting is between pro-Hamas or pro-Israel groups is not yet clear. And they note the conflict may simply be a matter of actual students enraged by the general blockade. And so far, and at the time, that meant as of Wednesday morning, no substantial police presence is visible. I know, somebody ought to put on a MAGA hat, and they'll be right down there busting heads in a jiffy. And while that may have been what actually happened, it may actually be that there's a limit to bad optics, even for the far-gone left. By Thursday, police finally decided, and even in California, folks, that it was just getting too embarrassing. And the police had to go into UCLA campus and clean out the protesters. This after drone video footage revealed the UCLA pro-Hamas peaceful protesters training in hand-to-hand combat. It was, in fact, hilarious, say people who've actually trained in martial arts. A report from Alex Hall via Red State Nation notes that having competed in Thai boxing for years, he suspected that the so-called fight instructor actually had to go and look up on YouTube how to throw a proper punch before the class. Quote, I know that the soy boys and girls and whatevers that are out there aren't going to retain anything when an actual trained police officer comes at them. I predict that 95% will just turtle up while crying for mommy, and the others will freeze while recording everything. Says the Zero Hedge coverage, as of about 10 o'clock Eastern Time, within hours of the Los Angeles PD, California Highway Patrol, and Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office starting to clear an encampment erected by the Marxist and pro-Hamas protesters at UCLA, the news is spreading on X that police have claimed to have regained complete control of the courtyard after having pushed out the last few hundred. And law and order, or at least what now passes for it in the People's Republic of California, has been restored. Still, said Fox News, this place is a total mess, and the reporter noted classes won't restart until next week because the protesters seem to have just destroyed UCLA for fun. And what do you bet they've missed the irony in that, too? Bottom line, says Zero Hedge, brainwashed Marxist kids causing chaos at woke universities and spreading like cancer across the nation is terrible optics, and even the Biden-Fuhrer puppet masters don't like that, this time during an election year. But wait, is it cognitive dissonance, doublethink, or do they really do believe you are, in fact, that stupid? Because then they turn right around and say, you know what, we don't have enough college riots, enough violence, we're certainly intending to push towards Civil War 2.0, so hey, I know, let's import a whole bunch more of Hamas terrorists from right at the source, the Middle East. And now the Biden-Fuhrer has announced a Gaza refugee plan to welcome people who hate America and pose a threat to national security. This is the headline from the Daily Mail. As if it wasn't bad enough that they're already taking over college campuses and Soros is paying activists, there's a shocker, to stage what we're seeing are increasingly violent protests, the Biden-Fuhrer, or those pulling his puppet strings, are now saying it's not enough that we brought in the Chinese Communist Party, PLA, and Special Forces military men by the literally thousands at this point, maybe seven divisions worth already, say some retired U.S. military generals. And we've got the Taliban, Hezbollah, Hamas, you name it. If they're terrorists like MS-13, they can come on in, get their bus tickets, and go join up with their cells. We're going to be importing more. The latest budget-busting foreign subsidy bill, which, as you recall, told the American people, screw you and the border to the south. Still, though, we're going to spend over $3 billion inviting additional terrorists in. And guess what religion they're going to be? Hint, hint. It's not going to be Christianity or anything remotely scripture-related. Now they're openly talking about bringing in more so-called refugees to add to the problem. There are at least a few non-rhinos that are sounding the alarm, saying all of this could present a national security risk. Gee, do you think? According to government documents reviewed by CBS News, says the Daily Mail piece, multiple federal agencies under the Biden Fuhrer are considering a plan to bring Palestinian refugees straight on into the United States and bypass the wait at the southern border. The plan comes as pro-Gaza protests have engulfed college campuses across the country. Students who are probably seen as likely Biden voters, or at least they'll drink the Kool-Aid, have expressed solidarity with the Strip, while Republicans, at least some of them, ripped the idea as foolish and dangerous. And I'll say it again, gee, do you think? Said Homeland Security Chairman for the House, Mark Green of Tennessee, to the Daily Mail in an exclusive statement, quote, there is no justification for allowing those who actively hate America, our founding principles, and our way of life into our country, unquote. The Daily Mail went on to note that the regime is reportedly mulling a plan to bring Palestinian refugees, who probably already have an axe to grind, directly from Gaza to the United States, and the plan, it says, may provide the refugees with what else? Housing assistance and a pathway to citizenship, while the Whorehouse and other federal agencies have not confirmed or denied the plan. And additionally, says Representative Mark Green, there's no way to properly vet any of these potential refugees. But since when would that be any kind of a change? Folks, isn't it clear by now that these riots and this invasion is intended to serve a purpose? Meanwhile, your host has suggested that probably the most overlooked story of the week, even though the press is going to hype it to high heaven, but for an entirely different reason, has to do with what really happened in Charlotte, North Carolina on Monday, and how it also looks like another ramp up in a feedback loop. Here we go. And this is the essential common headline you're going to hear from the left stream all day long until, of course, they get their way. And it's time for the next propaganda wave in the news cycle. Charlotte shooting. 4 officers killed, 4 others wounded, trying to serve warrant. U.S. Marshals among those killed. Says the Daily Mail's graphic headline with lots of video and the usual lots of pictures. Officer Joshua Iyer, who was shot dead alongside 3 U.S. Marshals in a bloody standoff with a gunman, as dramatic video shows the moment SWAT teams rammed the suspect's house with a huge tank, and they put that in all caps, and launched their raid. Yes, it was a melee. There were shots fired. It sounded like Vietnam, said some of the neighbors. And it was a circus, folks, with more cops and cars and tanks than you can, well, I would have said possibly imagine, but no, now you're just going to have to get used to it. Because I suggest, being a conspiracy theorist from way back, that this is precisely what's been anticipated, planned, and you're going to see a lot more of. And how do we know that? Well, not just the coverage. We've been seeing the build-up to this and the hype for quite a while now. And it's already being spun exactly like every conspiracy theorist out there has long said it would. But what's telling is not only the uniformity of the coverage, literally every story says almost the same thing word for word, it's also the things that used to be part of Journalism 101 that you're not hearing. And I actually read about a dozen different waste, well, not really that different, waste stream media stories trying to find out the information that evidently they don't want you to know. Like who and what, and much less why. This one from AP is typical, if not prototypical. Quote, 4 law officers, sick, serving a warrant for a felon wanted for possessing a firearm. Ooh, there you go. That's key. Were killed and 4 other officers wounded in a shootout Monday at a North Carolina home, said police. Whose home? Well, they're not going to tell you. Some of the officers who rushed to the Charlotte neighborhood to rescue the first wave of downed officers were wounded as a second shooter began firing on them after they killed the wanted man, said the Charlotte Mecklenburg police chief, Johnny Jennings. And interestingly, I gotta wonder, what was the wanted man who was so deadly doing out in the front yard while they were allegedly trying to serve this warrant? Something here doesn't quite wash. We'll skip the pablum that you expect to hear at every news conference after a high-profile shooting of people who are better than you and therefore deserving of coverage, because it's a blue uniform that matters, folks, not nearly so much your God-given, once constitutionally protected rights. Now, let's get this straight up front, and I hope I don't have to repeat it, and it really doesn't need to be repeated, but it's a tragedy when anyone is murdered, even a real felon. And that includes teenagers killed by lethal injections in their so-called schools, or young kids murdered by illegal invaders, especially after they're raped or worse, and all the people that are killed every single day after being disarmed in gun-free killing zones. Am I upset and concerned when cops are killed? You bet. But not because they're better than you and more worthy of keeping and bearing arms than you. Oh yeah, and let's get this straight too. And not when they're violating their oaths and taking away your God-given rights and then get killed in the process. And if it's not clear, but it will be, I'm talking about the coming wave of red flag executions. And we're going to hear the drumbeat for that going through the roof as of today, and we know it. After a three-hour standoff, it says, the suburban Charlotte home was torn open. Armored vehicles smashed into it, ripping out windows and entire doorways that were left broken. Several armored vehicles were parked across yards, some with tree branches dangling from them. The task force, said the Daily Mail, made up of federal agents and other officers from across the region, was fired on by the wanted suspect as they approached the house, and that man, whatever he was, whoever he was, and whatever he was guilty of, was killed in the front yard, said Jennings. His name has not been released, but she said, well, all you need to know is, and he didn't put it that way, but I will, he was wanted as a felon possessing an illegal weapon. Or was it illegally possessing a weapon, or is it simply that shall not be infringed doesn't matter? A second person then fired on officers from inside the home, and later they found a high-powered rifle. Another one of those things, folks, that we're going to now see on Big Brother's ban list. A woman and a 17-year-old male, both unnamed, and we're not going to get a clue as to why they were there either, were found in the home after the standoff, but they're being questioned, said the police chief. Notice anything missing, folks? Yeah, I'll say it again. Who was the wanted man? What was the felony he was supposedly convicted of? Why were they deciding that it was worth killing a whole bunch of people to take this firearm from this guy now? Or was it just that we needed a distraction from the other parts of the news cycle? The U.S. Marshals Task Force, the stories say. And what task force? You're not going to find that out. Not from these sources, and not today. One of the better sources out there, though, the Gateway Pundit, at least has this early information. The Charlotte shooter has been identified as 39-year-old Terry Clark Hughes, Jr. They have a picture, and they also note that two females were arrested from the house, including the 17-year-old, and the police are now saying there may have been, oh, yeah, come on, there certainly was, a second shooter. So is it two females, or a female and a 17-year-old boy, or is it just that the press can't even tell the difference anymore between boys and girls, and they're proud of that? Now, let me make this clear, too. I'm not surprised to see contradictions and even mistakes in early coverage, but what I am a little bit concerned about is information that you would have thought would have been well-known, especially by local media, like if this guy was such a threat, and if he, in fact, was a wanted man, why weren't the locals aware of it? Why weren't the neighbors aware of it? And most importantly, what aren't they telling us? We can kind of guess. And why not? Instead, we're hearing this. The whorehouse that happens to be painted white says that the marionette in chief was awakened from his nap and briefed on the incident, and brief, I think, is the operative word, folks, given the intellect we're dealing with here. In a statement, the Biden Fuhrer then called the officers heroes who made the ultimate sacrifice and said, more must be done, and you know what that means, don't you? Already dancing on the graves, the Biden Fuhrer read the teleprompter, or was it just a note card he keeps handy in his front pocket, to again call on Congress to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines and anything else that the Constitution says shall not be infringed, and pass other so-called gun safety measures that really mean disarm the American people and finish the gang rape of the Bill of Rights, including, quote, universal background checks und the national red flag law that you will have or else. Which, if you think about it, folks, and you're not supposed to, is undoubtedly a really big part of how we got here. So let's summarize what we know now before they really spin out the already pre-prepped narrative. It is, without question, truly a tragedy that these officers were sacrificed on the altar of gun control. But you know how it is for the left. The ends always justify the means. And if a few peons have to die, even if they wear blue uniforms or badges, so be it. So be it. But if Big Brother and those who want you disarmed get their way, each bereaved family and those yet to come can at least rest assured that his sacrifice and death will be among the multitude in a continuing process that will finally achieve the ultimate totalitarian dream. All honest Americans who once believed in that Constitution and Bill of Rights thing are disarmed so that they can do the same thing to the rest of the Bill of Rights. Let's call this what it was, folks, yet another blood sacrifice. Why? So when we go door to door and sacrifice more police officers, just exactly like this, we can have the escalation that we've been jonesing for that leads to scenes just like this all over the country. One thing's for sure, folks, this was a red flag, all right. Watch closely how this plays out, because it's just getting rolling, and it is absolutely, no doubt about it at this point, intended to be the first of many such. Well, okay, who am I kidding? Not the first, not even the beginning of the middle. Because we've seen it before. But by now, at least, we ought to recognize the pattern and be paying close attention because, as I said, we're absolutely going to see it again. Which takes me next, folks, to this. I think it's at least an interesting coincidence, especially since O'Keefe actually had it up first. James O'Keefe and his media organization that's been for a long time doing yeoman's work, revealing the insiders and what they actually think about the peons that they come to kill, steal, and destroy, has been teasing another of his blockbuster videos, this one with a fellow named Jason Beck, a Department of Defense employee, who asserts that firearms owners need to have their guns confiscated by force, by the National Guard, or, hey, maybe by some U.S. Marshals task force. The DOD employee casually noted in the video that, quote, he would like to do some work on the state's monopoly on violence. When asked what the state's monopoly on violence actually meant, he replied, it's the idea that the state, the almighty state, your host would note, meaning the country, or at least what now passes for it, quote, is the only sort of legitimate purveyor of violence, unquote, says the ANP summary here by Eric Utter. Anyone feel a chill? Well, folks, if you didn't, take a look at the news today and ask yourself, isn't this amazing? Did you get the message? I can guarantee you the neighbors did. Guess who they think has the only possible monopoly on force? And they got it good and hard. And meanwhile, no surprise, criminal invaders are coming into the country and getting checks and bus tickets and, yeah, firearms, too, that you peons aren't allowed to have. Isn't that amazing? Do we see task forces deporting them or even putting them in jail after a murder or a rape or a dozen? No wonder people are buying guns and the Fuhrer's minions need to up the ante and show them who's boss. And they're all backed by the Biden cartel and the, let me get this right here, the state's monopoly on violence. See, it's not even newsworthy when peons get killed, or a rancher in Arizona, for example, goes on trial for murder, and ultimately ends up losing his ranch because he dared to think he actually had a God-given, once constitutionally protected right to defend it. Back to James O'Keefe's latest here. Ask about that pesky Second Amendment protection of the individual right to keep and bear arms. Beck said, quote, I think we should repeal it. Well, at least he admits that it needs to be repealed, as opposed to, for example, just ignored like the Biden Fuhrer and Congress seem to intend to do. Repeal it and take them all away. You have to take them. He then said that the National Guard might need to be employed and that those in it would have to, quote, follow, get this, lawfully given order. Except, of course, an order to violate the God-given constitutionally protected rights of the American people is not even remotely lawful. But this is the kind of people that are drawing a paycheck, folks, from those who think they have a monopoly on violence. But this Big Brother employee traitor wasn't done yet. He spoke of another favorite communist socialist DNC idea, packing the Supreme Court, saying, quote, we need the majority on the court so that they can't stop any potential legislation intended to disarm the once free American populace. Let me ask it again, folks. Is it starting to become clear that more blood sacrifices are intended? I certainly hope that there'll be more and more real law enforcement who'll recognize what the real law is and say, the answer is not just no to tyranny, it's hell no, before they end up being sacrificed on the altar to Molech too. Which, folks, reminds me of an interesting quote. Edmund Burke is said to have said that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. I certainly consider that that is a warning to actual police officers who put their hand on a Bible before God and swore to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution against enemies foreign and, yep, take a look around, domestic. The Bible reminds us more than once that to whom much is given, much is expected, and that men are held to the words from their mouths, ultimately. But if you look that quote up, I guarantee you the first thing that you're going to see from Gulag and the other manipulated search engines is, did Edmund Burke really say that? No, he probably didn't really say that. Maybe the quote was misattributed. Well, you know, folks, I could care less. Yes, it's interesting that people like Edmund Burke and, yes, Thomas Jefferson and maybe John Stuart Mill and others said things that were similar, which isn't surprising at all. But the key is, they were all correct. And that truth is what really needs to be focused on, not arguing about whether or not the leftists want to expunge it from history. By midweek, of course, the Biden Fuhrer was, in fact, grave dancing in Charlotte. He went privately, say the reports, to comfort the family of those who were sacrificed on the altar of gun control. And honestly, I can't help but think that if I'd lost a loved one, I can't imagine anything more insulting than having a senile imposter show up to dance on his grave and make political hay from the, sacrifice. And local coverage even said the meeting would be closed to the press and public so they don't have to worry about being embarrassed. Isn't that special? And we'll be right back after this. Just like yesterday, Welcome back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. I am again your host, Mark Call, and let's pick it up with the story of how it is that Big Brother has to make sure that the peons are properly disarmed before they can continue with the rest of their plan to kill as many as possible. This story out of Brooklyn is a great way to begin the segment, and a nice segue, too, because it shows what happens that if you can turn people into felons, especially if they possess something peons aren't allowed to possess, it's kind of circular if you think about it, then you can go and SWAT raid them if they dare to think they have a right to keep and bear arms, or if they ever did. So what's next, and how do they get there? Well, here's a story that I think would give us a good example of exactly what's next. This is out of Brooklyn, where they don't have a rule of law, Brooklyn, New York. An amateur gunsmith, says a piece from Natural News, has been found guilty by a rigged jury of 13 charges of illegal weapons. See how it works? Now, who is this? This is Dexter Taylor, 52-year-old New York City native software engineer. During the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, he got to be fascinated. He had time on his hands, I guess. He couldn't leave and go outside. So he started studying gunsmithing and various things having to do with making firearms. He began building his own firearms in his basement, and he found out, quote, I'll read the quote, I found out you can actually legally buy a receiver. You know what, folks? If we didn't have a bunch of 20,000 or more unconstitutional gun control laws, you could buy anything you want. And indeed, free people used to be able to do that. Anyway, he says you can still buy a receiver. You can machine that receiver to completion. You buy your parts, you put them together, you've got a pistol or a rifle. And once I saw that, I was hooked. I was like, hey, this is the coolest thing ever. This is the most cool thing you could possibly do in your machine shop, unquote, which is why, guess what, you're not going to be allowed to have power, and they sure as hell don't want you to have a machine shop or, say it with me, a 3D printer. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which is, think about it. Here's an entity which, if we had a constitution, would not exist because their very raison d'etre is to infringe. Think about it. They take an oath. And they supposedly are sworn officers to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. What a joke. Are they really that stupid? Do they really not understand that shall not be infringed actually means shall not? Well, they get their paycheck, and I guess that's all that matters. The term that I used to use and still do for people that take money to, do things that the Bible says don't do, it was harlots, back in the old English of the King James Version. Some of us now would say whores, and that's appropriate, or maybe just sellouts. But regardless, they found that this guy was doing this, and they needed to make an example of somebody. I guess Waco was a little too far in the past. People have forgotten the death of those 6 or so. Anyway, so a joint Bureau of ATF and New York PD task force. Doesn't that sound a lot like what happened in Charlotte? They discovered he was legally buying parts from a bunch of different companies. They opened up what they laughably call an investigation, which led to a special weapons and tactics, a SWAT raid on his home and subsequent arrest. And the seated jury in New York, and you can get 12 idiots off the street in New York that'll vote to convict a ham sandwich. Wait a minute. That's not just New York, but New York's a particularly egregious example. We've seen that lately, haven't we? Especially if it's anything not far left. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. They found him guilty of criminal possession of a loaded weapon. What? Criminal possession of a loaded weapon. You thought shall not be infringed was bad. 4 counts of third-degree criminal possession of a weapon. 5 counts of criminal possession of a fire. Wait a minute. All of these crimes are things that the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed. They're not crimes. But that's not all. The verdict, delivered on April 16th, saw Taylor guilty on most counts. He is going to be sentenced here in another couple weeks, expecting to face a prison term of between 10 and 18 years. Aha! You peons, you will see what happens to you. And for this 52-year-old guy, if he survives what's coming, that means he won't get out until maybe age 70, most of his life then over. Get this. His defense attorney, in other words, a guy who was on his team but not really, detailed a contentious narrative of bias against his defendant. But the so-called judge repeatedly disrupted his opening statement and hinders his efforts to establish Taylor as a defense. The judge explicitly instructed the defense to refrain from invoking the Second Amendment. How dare you bring that damn thing into this courtroom? Because, quote, it had no relevance in the New York City courtroom. And here's how he put it. This is the lawyer now speaking. Don't bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. Doesn't exist here. So you can't argue Second Amendment. This is New York, said Varghese, recounting the words of the judge. He added that she rejected any such arguments, went out of her way to limit him. He tried to argue jury nullification and said, look, all it takes is one juror here that has half a brain to know that these things are unconstitutional. And, of course, they didn't have any such. And the judge even prohibited him from even suggesting what would be called nullification. She basically said, you must vote guilty, he noted, without actually saying you must vote guilty. But these are people that they can't read the Constitution, but they can read between the lines and they know where their bread is buttered. So he has been found guilty. Again, can we see where this has been headed? Where it's been headed for a long time, but now they're openly talking about it. Here's a guy in New York, admittedly one of the worst, who is guilty of what? Being a citizen with a brain who thinks he actually has God-given, once constitutionally protected rights, and he is now a felon. Guess what he's not going to be allowed to possess? What he wasn't allowed to possess anyway, because they raided his home and said, you can't even make it in your own basement. Now, if you understand all the elements of this, and I've talked about this in the past, turns out that they cannot prohibit something you make because of claims that it's involved somehow in interstate commerce or that it was from a licensed manufacturer. This completed quote-unquote firearm, and that term doesn't appear, by the way. That's a made-up word. In order to sidestep that right to keep and bear arms, which is more general anyway, isn't that amazing? And ultimately, they made up the law. They made up the words. They found him guilty of it, and he didn't even do the things that not too many years ago had to have been done in order to establish their nexus. So what you see here, in other words, is they are expanding the things that peons are not allowed to possess or even make themselves, and making examples of people who know and actually try to say, well, this is what the law allows. Well, no, hell, you got to understand it. There is no law anymore, folks, and that is the bigger point. You are a felon. You're just an unconvicted felon of a law that doesn't exist yet. But remember, used to be there was a thing in the Constitution called an ex post facto law prohibition. And they're going to basically say, you're a felon because of what you thought before. And now we know. Guess what we're going to do to you? Oh, yeah. In a twisted sort of way, folks, I think this story fits next in more than one way. This is a piece from naturalnews.com. I've seen indications on this front before, but it's yet another warning about the serious side effects of taking the Zyklon B injection. And one of them, oh yeah, if you don't die, if it doesn't kill you right away with myocarditis, pericarditis, strokes, blood clots, or heart attacks or turbo cancers, well, another one, this is something to look forward to, is dementia. And it turns out that it's not just the various ingredients in there, the lipid nanoparticles and the various carbon nanoparticles that are in there, carbon structures that look like little razor blades because they're only a molecule thin, and things that mess with your RNA, your DNA, the mRNA and the jab. No, there's this, too. One of the additional side effects, dementia, and it's prions, some people say prions, that are more responsible now than has been admitted before for causing people to develop the condition. Could even be contagious. Matter of fact, there's more and more indications that it is. So, if this wasn't a good enough reason to come out and get yourself separated from people that are probably poisoning you and your brain, now this is another indication. The problem stems, says the piece, from the fact that the COVID-19 vaccine shots cause what's called frame shifting that can spur the production of prions or prions. Again, short for proteinaceous infectious particles, they're responsible for causing neurodegenerative diseases in humans and animals alike. You've probably heard of chronic wasting disease or scrapie or the kind of things that deer and elk hunters have seen. Also called CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. I remember first talking about this on radio 20 years ago. Prions are really interesting things. They're also kind of scary. They essentially accumulate in neural tissue, especially the brain. They're called spongiform, so that's where one of the terms you'll hear comes from. BSE, mad cow disease, bovine spongiform encephalopathy. All of these are the result of these same proteins, prions. They're capable of folding in a number of different ways, and at least one of those permutations can be transmitted to other prion proteins, creating a disease that is similar in some ways, but not others, to viral infections. And here's one of the problems, folks. High temperature disinfection of tools and instruments, things like scalpels and so forth in hospitals. The reason why you didn't hear much about this, because it scared the hell out of hospital staffs. Turns out that once these things get into a hospital, they're almost impossible to get rid of because you can't burn them out. They survive high temperatures that kill everything else. And this is part of the reason they're notoriously difficult to treat, and they're typical of the extreme conditions that destroy pathogens or nucleic acids. The potential for these shots to cause a problem has been a concern since the early days of the pandemic. In a 2021 interview, Dr. Stephanie Seneff is one of several that have warned about this, saying that she feared the poison pokes, she called them the jabs, could lead to a slew of neurological prion-based diseases, including Alzheimer's. She published a paper in the International Journal of Vaccine Theory explaining the mechanisms and theorized that the spike protein and the Zyklon B could lead to prion-like diseases because they bind to proteins and induce them to misfold. This seems to be exactly what's happening, and there's more and more evidence to make that case. We've seen more cases of CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Normally, it's very rare. You had to get it from eating something like the meat from the mad cow disease, mad cows and so forth. Well, those have been largely identified, but it turns out now they're showing up more frequently in people who got the poison pokes. Matter of fact, like long COVID, 96.7% of people who have long COVID had taken the Zyklon B. And of course, as you know, dementia is a really scary thing. And here's yet another good reason to not only avoid the poison poke, but ask yourself the question, if it's not just taking the vax, but being around people that have taken the vax and are now shedding it on you, remember when the reverse argument was so idiotic? You have to ask, do I really want to associate with people that might just end up killing me? Not just by being little spike protein factories, which is bad enough, but now prions, and we're only just getting started. Turbo cancers are bad enough, but I think there's a lot of folks who probably regard dementia as a lot scarier than that. Meanwhile, of course, WHO and the Deep State, Davos, Bill Gates, WEF, New World Order crowd, who pull their tyrannical strings, is still trying to take over the world. And we're seeing more and more pre-plandemic hype that certainly makes it look like we're closer by the day. Here's just a sampling of the headlines from multiple sources and stories that indicate, oh yeah, they're really stoking the fires on this one. Like USA Today, bird flu outbreak is an evolving situation. Here's what you need to know about the symptoms and spread. Another one, what we know about bird flu and food safety today after it spreads to humans in America. How about this one? Experts sound the alarm over H5N1 bird flu and warn of a potential pandemic. Say it with me, folks. Worse than COVID. You've heard the rest. The Guardian, bird flu detected among chickens in Texas and Michigan. Found in South Dakota, dairy herd. Texas health officials issue warning. Bird flu now in 18 states. Restrictions placed on cow movement. Bird flu is spreading to more and more farm animals. Are milk and eggs safe?
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Enough, I get the point.
On April 3rd, the Financial Times asked, the next pandemic, they didn't spell it right, is coming. Will we be ready? And just this weekend, the Daily Mail said, inside the world's deadliest cave that could cause the next pandemic.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
And remember, folks, how many times they had to try and kick things off before COVID finally caught the desired traction. Marburg, Ebola, Zika, later monkeypox, you name it, and we're not done yet. Matter of fact, they're just getting rolling. Right now, says a piece from Kit Knightley at Off Guardian, they're talking about Disease X, a term which caused just a little panic in certain sections when it first appeared on the scene, but it's part of a placeholder theme. And as a placeholder, the name does its job for the time being because they don't really need the actual name yet any more than they need the actual disease. The idea is just to hold it over people's heads while they construct the legislative nightmare of their coming health-based tyranny. Indeed, vagueness is what Disease X is all about. That's why it's helpful because it keeps the legislation equally vague. That said, though, they'll want and or need to produce an actual disease at some point. If it kills a lot of people, so much the better. When that time comes around, it'll probably be another respiratory disease because they're easy to fake using pre-existing endemic databases and their more or less uniform symptoms. And, yep, we've said it. I've talked about it here on this show, folks. The prime candidate is bird flu, H5N1, but there are other H's and N's around as well. And it's been slow-bowling in the news for 2 years now. They've killed tens of millions of chickens and other poultry, also helpfully putting a big dent in the food supply and raising costs. And now they got a big uptake in the coverage due to allegedly having it passed to people from cows. There are headlines like this, gleefully, even from the Daily Star. New pandemic expected as human-to-human bird flu is of great concern to who? And yeah, let's not forget, bird flu is not only a convenient pick, but really logical, because it enables the tyrants to both push their health tyranny, the vaccine passports, lockdowns, masks, all the other idiocy that we've seen from before, and their food transition. You will eat bugs at the very same time, because they can claim that dairy, beef, chicken, and eggs have all become dangerous as an excuse to either ration them or just outright kill them and make sure that either way you don't get them. And of course, prices, if they're available at all, go through the Bidenflation roof. And then you know it, they're already pushing it, the idea that veganism, maybe lab-grown fake meat, prevents pandemics, which they've been claiming for at least 3 years or more now. Says the piece from Kit Knightley, the only real downside to the bird flu scam is that it's hard to work in the bogus climate change angle into the narrative, so maybe they'll have to go with something else on top of it. But you do know we're getting closer, because earlier this month, the White Whorehouse published their new pandemic preparedness targets. And the Federal Death Agency, hey, if you can't trust them, who can you trust? Maybe the FBI or the CDC. They posted a new update on their findings concerning the AH5 and AH7 viruses, confirming contamination in pasteurized milk. And here you thought it was only raw milk that was be afraid, be very afraid, booga booga dangerous. And how did they do it? With the polymerase chain reaction, or infamous PCR test. Well known for providing all the false positives any tyrant could want. They wrote the following last week, that the FDA received some initial results from their nationally representative commercial milk sampling study, and the agency continues to analyze this information. However, be aware that the initial results show about 1 in 5 of the retail samples tested with the PCR qualitative test for HPA1 viral fragments showed a greater proportion of positive results coming from milk in areas with infected herds. While they note, and you ought to take special care to note this, folks, PCR result positives don't necessarily represent actual virus that may actually be a risk to consumers, but it sure is scary. Additional testing is required, they say, to determine whether the intact pathogen is still present, or if it remains infectious, or if it was ever really a problem or existed to begin with, but we're not going to emphasize that part. The FDA is further assessing any positive findings through egg inoculation tests, which is the gold standard for determining if an infectious virus is really present, they say. And here's the admission. Early work by NIH-funded investigators, SICK, indicates an absence of the infectious virus in their studies of retail milk. So I guess that's something they're going to have to work on. Which leads to this next question, again courtesy of Kit Knightley's piece, how will what we're going to see next differ from COVID? Because any future pandemic psyop will be unlikely to follow the COVID pattern beat for beat. How stupid do they think people really are anyway? One thing, the COVID narrative spent itself out before it achieved everything it was meant to achieve and the massive death totals that they're still jonesing for. But you can bet the farm, says Knightley, that in the 4 years since they unwrapped this one, there have been working groups and researchers, SICK, that have been poring over the pandemic data to see just how effective their tools and propaganda really were to figure out what went wrong and how they can fix it next time. Still, says the piece, there seem to be three major recurring themes. Like this one. People kind of got sick and tired of the lockdowns, and they saw through it eventually. So next time, there'll need to be a focus on securing vaccines for everybody, whether you like it or not, especially, rather than lockdowns. Indeed, suggests this author, and this is plausible, folks, part of the old, aw shucks, gee, lockdowns turned out to be more damaging than we would have thought, rigmarole, is about setting up the dynamic that next time we need to do anything we can, including mass vaccinations, whether you like it or not, to avoid those lockdowns. So now they've become a threat rather than a fact. In other words, next time we're going to mandate those vaccines, and your e-vaccine passport will prove it, because we and the economy can't afford another lockdown. Or how about this one? You have to have that vaccine, and you'd better know that it's going to be mandated because you don't want to have another lockdown, do you? So there'll be more testing, bogus as we know it was, more masks, more vaccine mandates, and more quarantine camps for the un- or under-vaccinated. And when they do have lockdowns, you know it'll be confined and blamed entirely on the anti-vaxxers. Number two, speed, speed, speed. The main failing they note of the COVID narrative was that it ran out of steam. And by the time the vaccines rolled out in early 2021, the pandemic fatigue was already setting in. People were getting sick and tired of it. Some of us were already starting to see through it or more. And by the time the third round of boosters and the fourth waves then rolled out and were in the headlines, nobody really cared anymore. And those that did were either dead or some of the maze bright had started to figure it out. In other words, the propaganda blitzkrieg of early 2020 was perhaps the greatest and most wide-reaching misinformation campaign of all time. And it was certainly almost overwhelmingly effective, but it slowed, eventually stalled, stopped, and staled. So this time around, they know they're going to have to do one thing, and that's be blitzkrieg fast before people can figure out just exactly what hit them. And Bill Gates said as much at the 2022 Munich Security Conference. They need to get the next disease out, get the deaths up, and the vaccines in before people realize that this is deja vu all over again. And you know what? They're even now talking about the 100-day vaccine plan and challenge. That is, how to contain the virus and to keep it spreading and keep the fear level up while the so-called scientific response, you know that, it means the vaccine, as well as the diagnostics and treatment that go right hand in hand with it, can be approved, manufactured, and then force-fed to the public. Your host can't help but observe that it's a lot easier to make that time schedule if you somehow or other know in advance exactly which of the booga booga pathogen candidates you intend to release. The 100-day mission, says the piece, is the brainchild of the CEPI, Bill Gates, and the WHO-backed NGO, and its main aim is to make it possible to produce new vaccines for previously unknown, or at least...
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
In 100 days or less... Oh yeah, and I guess this bears pointing out, although it's not obvious, folks, you're probably going to be duped. It should go without saying, say everybody that's been paying attention, that the concept of safe and effective vaccines cannot be produced in that, well, in 100 months, much less 100 days. So whatever it is that they intend to make, sell, and force inject you with, it won't be a vaccine. But that shouldn't surprise anybody that's still alive, at least, by now, anyway. Finally, let's not forget this. Free speech is dangerous, certainly to those that want you dead. The slow development of the post-2020 narrative may have hindered the health tyranny agenda, says the author, but it was the independent media and those of us that saw through the BS right up front that really heard it. The impromptu network of dissident experts, independent actual researchers, and even socialist media movements ended up spreading what the ministries of truth called misinformation faster than the powers that be could check and extinguish it. We've seen perpetual messaging about the dangers of misinformation, malinformation, and disinformation ever since, including prominently at the most recent Davos summit earlier this year, where it was labeled one of the three greatest dangers facing the planet. And last week, a parliamentary committee in the UK published recommendations that were headlined this way, quote, government should learn lessons from the pandemic, and yep, they spelled it wrong, in order to approve, no, it says improve, communications and counter misinformation. And just last week, Gordon Brown was quoted in the news warning that fake news risks our carefully laid preparations for the next pandemic, which heavily implies, as if we didn't know this, that they're going to move to counter the fake news before they release their next pandemic. And by the way, folks, Kit Knightley seems to believe, and I don't necessarily agree at all, that they'll wait until after the next election before unleashing it. And why? He suggests they need it to be during flu season so they can co-opt normal seasonal deaths into their pandemic narrative. I can't help but remind him they've got a whole bunch of deaths already on tap as a result of the last pandemic. People that took the boosters destroyed their immune system, and they're still dying for all kinds of reasons. They got to roll those up somehow or other. And how better than to blame it on the next pandemic? And then he says, I think they'll also want to wait until after the big election year is over so they can have their fresh governments in place. Well, at least in the United States, one thing you can guarantee is whatever government ends up in there, it won't be fresh. I can't help but think, hey, look how effective the last pandemic was at rigging the election and making sure they could scare people away from voting on actual election day. Why, for crying out loud, would they change that when it worked so well? And by the way, the more we see the booga booga H5N1 bird flu et al. Hype being rolled out, the more I tend to believe expected sooner rather than later.